Winfrey's staff had decided that after she interviewed Rogers, it would be fun to have him take questions from the audience and maybe provide some guidance to mothers. And he certainly tried, telling them that to understand children, I think the best that we can do is to think about what it was like for us. But the plan didn't succeed. As soon as the children started to ask him questions directly, he seemed to get lost in their world, slowing his responses to their pace and even hunching in his chair as if to insinuate himself down to their level. This wasn't good television, at least good adult television. Everything was going into a kind of slow motion as Fred Rogers became Mr. Rogers, connecting powerfully with the smallest children present. He seemed to forget the camera as he focused on them one by one. Winfrey began to look a little worried. Although she was still about a year away from the national syndication that would make her a superstar, her program was already a big hit. And here she was, losing control of it to a bunch of kids and what looked like a slightly befuddled grandfather. Then it got worse. In the audience, Winfrey leaned down with her microphone to ask a little blonde girl if she had a question for Mr. Rogers. Instead of answering, the child broke away from her mother, pushed past Winfrey, and ran down to the stage to hug him. As the only adult present, not stunned by this apparently, Fred Rogers knelt to accept her embrace. Minutes later, he was kneeling again, this time to allay a small boy's concerns about a miniature trolley installed on Winfrey's stage to recall the famous one from his own show, the trolley that traveled to the neighborhood of make-believe. The boy was worried about the tracks, which seemed to be canted precariously at the edge of the stage. As the two conferred quietly, Winfrey stood in the audience looking more than a little lost. Seeing that the show was slipping away from her, she signaled her crew to break to an ad. For Fred Rogers, it was always this way when he was with children, in person or on his hugely influential program. Every weekday, this soft-spoken man talked directly into the camera to address his television neighbors in the audience as he changed from his street clothes into his iconic cardigan and sneakers. Children responded so powerfully, so completely to Rogers that everything else in their world seemed to fall away as he sang "It's a Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood." Then, his preschool-age fans knew that he was fully engaged as Mr. Rogers, their adult friend who valued his viewers just the way you are. It was an offer of unconditional love, and millions took it. Mr. Rogers' neighborhood often reached 10% of American households, 5 to 10 million children each day who wanted to spend time with this quiet, slightly stooped, middle-aged man with a manner so gentle as to seem a little feminine. Over time, as new generations of parents, some of whom had grown up with the neighborhood themselves, swelled the ranks of his admirers, Fred Rogers achieved something almost unheard of in television. He reached a huge nationwide audience with an educational program, a reach he sustained for almost 4 decades. Rogers became a national advocate for early education just at the time that psychologists, child development experts, and researchers worldwide were finding that learning that takes place in the earliest years, social and emotional as well as cognitive, is a crucial building block for successful and happy lives. Mr. Rogers' appeal was evident from the beginning of his career, as the managers of WGBH in Boston discovered one day in April 1967. At that point, his program aired on the Eastern Educational Network, a PBS precursor, and was called Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. It had been shown regionally for only a year. Recognizing its popularity, the managers organized a Meet the Host event and broadcast an invitation for Rogers' young viewers to come to the station with their parents. The staff was prepared for a crowd of 500 people. 5,000 showed up. The line stretched down the street toward Soldiers Field, where the Harvard football team played, and created traffic slowdowns reminiscent of game days. The station quickly ran out of snacks for the children. As the line wound into the studio, Rogers insisted on kneeling to talk with each child just as he